oversized 6-foot bathtub, and it fit nicely with all doors closed. By the numbers, the 2007 Nissan Quest 3.5 SE gets about 18 miles in the city, 25 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $41,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Mark Noller, live at the White House. In 3 hours, President Bush addresses the nation to announce his new strategy on Iraq. It includes a commitment to increase the number of U.S. forces there by some 22,000. But Mr. Bush will say that only the Iraqis can end the sectarian violence in their country. And he'll use his speech to serve notice on the Iraqi government, warning that, quote, America's commitment is not open-ended. He briefed congressional leaders this afternoon, and one of the top Democrats, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, wasn't buying what the president's selling.
Again, speaking for me, I'm at a loss as to what's going to happen with these additional troops.
Reid calls the Bush strategy an escalation of the war in Iraq. The White House rejects that characterization. And Mr. Bush will say tonight that his new strategy will bring the U.S. closer to success in Iraq. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Noller. With more CBS News, here's Harley Carnes.
The bill is passed.
The House has passed the bill to increase the minimum wage by about 40%. CBS's Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill.
The House bill would give a small raise now to those at the minimum, and over the next 2 years bring it up to $7.25 an hour. Still not much for a full-time worker with a family, but better than the $5.15 where it's been stuck for the past 10 years. House Democrats rejected Republican efforts to link the increase to some tax benefits for small businesses that hire a lot of minimum wage workers, but that may end up in the final bill that passes the Senate.
That's because President Bush has said he'd only sign a bill that gives small businesses that help. Money talks, and sometimes it shouts. The majority of the people who live at a Florida coastal trailer park decided to take the $500 million in developers' money and move.
It's time for us to move on to another part of our life.
Money does not make you happy.
Developers plan to build more high-rise condos there. Belarus gave up on collecting a bigger piece of the Russian oil that crosses its territory. Belarusian officials had slapped a $45 per ton tax on Russian oil pumped across their country. Russia backed down on the big tax it had put on its own oil to Belarus a few weeks ago, which depends on cheap oil for its refineries to make those big profits. Russia needs the pipeline to reach the rest of Europe, so they sheathed their tax swords. What do ex-convicts do when they get out of prison? More than the average number of them die.
Drug overdoses were by far the biggest killer in the 2 weeks following release, accounting for more than 70% of the deaths. After 2 years, they were still the major cause of death among ex-inmates, followed by heart disease, murder, and suicide.
CBS's Barry Bagnato in Washington. Oil prices today continued to come down, closing at $54.02 a barrel, down $1.62. On Wall Street, another good day, the Dow up about 25.5 points to close at 12,442. The NASDAQ gained 15 points. This is CBS News.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
Let's kick back for the moment. Let your worries drift away, cause here we're living for today. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of the day. Go out back tonight, where fresh R.E. Turner is seasoned, seared, and served on a bed of crisp romaine. Start the new year fresh. Leave your worries at the door.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life will still be there tomorrow.
Go out back.
Seems the TV channels may not be paying much attention to the watchdogs for family and children programming. WTOP's Darcy Marchese.
The Parents Television Council says the 2005-2006 TV season
was the most violent that the PTC has ever recorded.
President Tim Winter says since 1998,
violence increased in every time slot and on virtually every network.
He says every 13 and a half minutes, viewers can expect to see an instance of violence during prime time. The group says besides the frequency of violence increasing,
the depictions of violence are far more graphic and more realistic than ever before.
The commissioner of the FCC is calling for parents to better monitor what their kids watch.
Yvonne DiCarlo has died, probably best known as Lily Munster, the shapely vampirous wife of big, lovable Herman. That TV show is still seen in syndication. DiCarlo's career also included starring roles on the big screen, including The Ten Commandments, Moses' wife. She was 84. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Is your office in disarray? Can't find what you need? Well, Office Depot has great deals on file folders, binders, filing cabinets, shredders, and storage containers. Plus, we have over 800 calendars and planners to keep you up to date. So hurry in. Let Office Depot lend you a hand getting organized. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Whoa, Office Depot!
Let's kick back for the moment. Let your worries drift away, cause here we're living for today. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of the day. Go out back tonight, where fresh R.E. Turner is seasoned, seared, and served on a bed of crisp remain. Start the new year fresh. Leave your worries at the door.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life will still be there tomorrow.
Go out back.
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We're live, unrehearsed, unscripted, and we originate in Pelosi country on the dreaded left coast. Ah, yes, I espouse San Francisco values. And if you can't handle it, go ahead, move to Indiana. We've got a lot to talk about at the very end of our show today. We're going to kick back and listen to W. explain why he needs to escalate, that's the way he'll say it, the war in Iraq. Escalate, nuclear, you know, it's all part of the same pronunciation package. And to prepare you for it, coming up next hour, Professor John Quigley from Ohio State School of Law is going to join us and argue the point I tried to make yesterday, that Democrats can oppose this president by demanding a new resolution under the War Powers Act. And how many Democrats will sing this song? Oh, Mr. President, my country, right or wrong, you're the commander-in-chief, and we're opposed to an escalation, but we'll get out of your way. I hope it's a limited number and that Joe Lieberman's the only one, really. Also on today's program, coming up next hour, Larissa Alexandrovna, a regular contributor to this program. She's managing news editor at rawstory.com, and she's got the scoop on why John Negroponte took a demotion. He was the so-called intelligence czar, a cabinet-level post, riding herd on all of our intelligence efforts, and he resigned to take the junior spot under Condoleezza Rice at the State Department. And there's some interesting theories from Larissa. I'll just sum it up this way. Was Negroponte too light on surveillance of Americans? And was Dick Cheney unhappy with that? Well, we'll pursue those angles with Larissa when she joins us a little bit later. And Democratic Congressman from Monterey, Salinas, and the Monterey coastal area, Sam Farr, will join us at the top of our free speech zone, third hour today. And he is a member of the Out of Iraq Caucus. I don't have too many differences with him on the principle, but I do want to talk to him about the strategies the Democrats are pursuing to bring this president into line and to end the atrocious occupation in Iraq. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can call us whenever the urge strikes you at 888-5-PETER-B. It's toll-free, 888-573-8372. You can drop me an email, and people do, peter@peterbcollins.com. One guy dinged me yesterday for referring to myself as your humble host. He said, if you're really humble, you'd never say that. And I said, dude, are you out of irony over there? Yeah, so that's what's coming up on the program today. And you may think that our first hour here is not directly connected to the issues that you're going to hear about later. But it is, because what we're talking about is reducing America's dependence on oil in general and foreign oil in particular. What are you using to power your vehicle, huh?
My baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile. My curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio. With no particular place to go. Riding along in my automobile.
Now, what if your automobile happened to be a plug-in hybrid? You could be enjoying a comfortable ride, a very quiet engine, and up to 100 miles per gallon in gasoline mileage. Sherry Boschard has written a powerful new book called Plug-in Hybrids, subtitled The Cars That Will Recharge America, and she joins us at our secret Peter B. Collins studio this afternoon. Sherry, welcome.
Hi, Peter.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What are you driving?
Well, I drove here in my all-electric Toyota RAV4 EV. It's a compact SUV. Looks just like the gas model, except there's no gas, no engine, no tailpipe. It's all electric.
And did you replace the innards to make it an all-electric car? Because to my knowledge, they're not sold that way by Toyota.
Well, that's correct. No, this was made by Toyota. Actually, all of the car companies in the last decade made all-electric cars. The thing is, most of them only lease them. They did it under protest in response to California clean air regulations. And if any of your listeners have seen the movie Who Killed the Electric Car, then they've seen this whole story, which makes up the first chapter of my book.
Mm-hmm.
Toyota, to its credit, they had a brief window where they actually sold a few hundred of these, and they had two kinds of leases, and at the end of the personal lease, you had the option to buy. So there's still about 800 all-electric RAV4s on the road, but all the other cars, the General Motors EV1, the Honda EV Plus, lots of Toyota RAV4s, other cars were taken back and crushed by the car companies when they got rid of the clean air laws.
And let's start there, because you profile a woman named Chelsea who was hired by General Motors to be an evangelist for the EV1. And at a certain point after she got laid off, she held a mock funeral for her electric car. I have not seen the documentary, and maybe some of our listeners haven't as well. Why was the electric car killed?
Well, it's a complex question and answer, which is why they had to make a whole movie out of it. It is now out on DVD and is also available for purchase, as well as my book, on pluginamerica.com. But the movie frames it in an entertaining way as a murder mystery. And the suspects that they look at in terms of why did we lose the electric cars include the big auto companies, the big oil companies. Were the batteries not good enough? Did consumers not want them? Did clean air regulators back down? Were people just diverted by the hype around hydrogen? And they look at each of these one by one, and at the end of the movie give guilty and innocent verdicts, and you can decide for yourself. It's really a combination of all of those. It was in 1990 at the Los Angeles Auto Show that General Motors first showed a prototype plug-in car, the all-electric EV1. And state air regulators in California said, oh, you can make a zero-emission vehicle? Now you have to make a zero-emission vehicle, and so do all the other car companies, if you want to sell your cars in our state.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like being told what to do, of course, so they immediately fought it. And there was a 13-year tug-of-war over how many they'd have to make, would they have to make them. They started putting them out on the road while they sued the state to get rid of the regulations, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if CARB, the California Air Resources Board, had instead mandated that they could not produce an electric car, that that would have irritated them enough that they actually would have done it?
I don't know.
Because Detroit mainly doesn't like to be told what to do, and they have a lot of power. They play the jobs card at the drop of a hat. And they have resisted both Democratic and Republican administrations over the years in trying to raise the fuel mileage fleet standards.
Well, they have, but it doesn't mean that we should stop moving them towards the right direction. At the end of the movie, there's a great quote that I love by S. David Freeman, who was an energy official in the Carter administration. And he's now president of the Los Angeles Board of Harbor Commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
And he's this nice southern gentleman with a great southern drawl.
Yeah, he played a role in the energy crisis here in California. Gray Davis handed off a lot of the dirty laundry to him.
Yes, and he gives good historical perspective when he says, the oil industry and the auto companies are resistant to change. The American people need to be reminded that it took a law to get seatbelts in the cars. It took a law to get airbags in the cars. It took a law to get the mileage up from 12 to 20 miles per gallon. It took a law to get catalytic converters to control the pollution. I think clean cars are too important to be left to the automobile industry. And that kind of says it all in terms of plug-in cars.
Mm-hmm. You can go ahead and silence your BlackBerry there. Well, and I love the way you read that quote with a little bit of a southern drawl just to access David Freeman for us. That was nice. But the point is well taken, that all of the things that we now consider standard or, you know, important to our safety or comfort in a car, many of them were resisted by Detroit when first suggested or imposed.
And so when people ask me for my shorthand answer of, you know, why did they crush the electric cars? Why didn't they sell them to us? Why don't we have them today? My synopsis of it comes down to, I think it was just sort of basic capitalist inertia. If you can just keep doing what you're doing and make money at it, why put any money into investing in a new technology unless either A, you have to because of government mandates, or B, you're really convinced that one of your competitors is going to do it and you need to beat them to it because there's a market out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the U.S. car companies ever really saw that market in the way that some of the Japanese companies did, and certainly the market that exists now since 9/11 and global warming and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of my listeners take a more cynical view and would suggest that this is just part of the rapacious greed and control needs of the auto industry, and that they know that their money is going to be made on gas-fired vehicles for the foreseeable future, and they wanted to stamp it out because they didn't want to be competing with themselves.
Well, that's what Chelsea Sexton likes to say. You know, one of the factors is if you have in your showroom two cars, and one of them is an all-electric, and you tell your customers you don't use gasoline over the life of the car, you'll save money, it's cleaner.
Like 70% fewer moving parts?
70% fewer moving parts. It runs on electricity, which is made in the U.S. of A., not a foreign country. Oh, and over here we have our other product, which is more expensive, dirtier, and dependent on oil. So which one would you like to buy?
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard tightrope for them to walk.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and continue with Sherry Boschert, B-O-S-C-H-E-R-T, for our listeners in Phoenix. It happens that she's going to be in Scottsdale this weekend. We'll give you the details coming up. And if you are currently a hybrid or electric vehicle owner and you'd like to call and talk about your experience, I want you to call. If you are thinking about getting into this kind of a vehicle, give us a call. We'll help you as much as we can. And if you have any other questions about the technology, about the politics of it, we'd love to hear from you. Lines open for you right now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Oh, we already played that one. Chuck, get out of here. This hour, you'll be hearing tunes from the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible music archives with car themes. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Join Glenn Brooks and pioneering dentist Dr. Floris Day in igniting a new wellness revolution that redefines the word natural and puts the tools you need for complete vitality into your hands. If you have avoided or hated the dentist or simply want to take your health up a notch, this is the program for you. Tune in to Vibrant Living right here on KRXA 540 AM at 10 o'clock this Saturday morning, January 13th.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Fasten that seatbelt. We want you to survive the trip through Dead Man's Curve. So far, I haven't heard that there is a Corvette hybrid. I'm sure they're working on it in Detroit right now. Sherry Boschert is our guest. Her new book is Plug-in Hybrids, The Cars That Will Recharge America. And Sherry, you've done a great job here because it's technical enough to explain to me how the different hybrid systems work, but not so technical that people would think that it's a scientific or even a popular science level of complexity. And you're clearly passionate about this subject. And yet you're not too stuffy or serious about it. I mean, I like the tone of that. What was your first contact with a non-gasoline or a vehicle consuming less gasoline?
Well, in 1998, when I first bought a house, was lucky enough to buy a house, I started putting in solar panels. And once you're making electricity from the sun, it's a natural step to think, gee, wouldn't it be great to have an electric car? I wonder if there's any out there. So I began looking around, and this was during the whole period when the car companies were putting them on the road in response to the state mandates in California. And in the early,
they were leasing them, though. They wouldn't actually sell them to people, which suggests control on Detroit's part.
Yeah, they didn't really want us to have them. They were fighting the state over these regulations. So I managed to lease a little Ford Think city car, which was made in Norway. They bought the Norwegian company that makes it. And it was perfect in San Francisco. It was tiny. It was a two-seater hatchback. And it was small enough I could park it anywhere in the city. You know those little curbs in between driveways where no one can park?
Right.
I could park there. That's a big bonus in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it went maybe, you know, up to 55 miles before I needed to charge it in, but it was meant to be just a city car.
Mm-hmm.
After a three-year lease, they took it back when all the car companies were taking them back and crushing them. And that just made me so angry. And thousands of other people, too, whose cars were being repossessed.
Mm-hmm.
So we started protesting. I mean, you mentioned Chelsea Sexton earlier, who was in Who Killed the Electric Car? People in L.A., including Chelsea, held mock funerals. We had some mock funerals up here. But it wasn't until a man named Mark Geller, a San Franciscan, hooked up with Rainforest Action Network, Global Exchange, and Greenpeace. And we coordinated a mock funeral for the Thinks here in San Francisco with a takeover of the Ford building in Norway, where the cars were made.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically said, this is not right. You shouldn't crush these Thinks. And Ford got such bad publicity over that, that 8 days later they said, okay, we'll stop crushing them. We'll send them back to Norway where people have waiting lists to buy them.
Yeah. I got a chance to test ride the Think bike that Ford was making using some of the same battery and rechargeable battery technology. And it was really cool. It was like a bicycle with flubber, if you remember those Disney movies from the early 60s. And, you know, each time I'd do a rotation on the pedal, you'd get almost twice as much torque out of it. Downside was the batteries didn't last very long, especially when you were climbing hills. But it was an interesting technology, and just as I got excited about it, they took it off the market. And, again, to close the loop here, is it true that Chevron Texaco now controls some of the most potent batteries and refuses to sell them in small quantities?
No one really. Well, the first answer to the first part of that question is yes.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate answer, you know, do they refuse to let people have them? No one can say for sure except Chevron Texaco and I think the major car companies. I mean, anyone who's been paying attention to cars this week has heard that at the Detroit Auto Show on Sunday, General Motors unveiled
The
Chevy Volt, the first major automaker plug-in hybrid. It's not for sale yet because they say, you know, we're going to sell it in a few years when the batteries are ready, when the lithium-ion batteries are ready. Well, to me, that's just another excuse to delay giving us these cars because nickel metal hydride batteries that were in all the electric cars that are in my electric car now would be perfectly fine for plug-in hybrids. But the patent on the nickel metal hydride batteries is owned jointly by the company that invented the batteries and Chevron Texaco. And the joint company, which is called Cobasys, the only thing they will say is it's not worth their while to sell a few batteries. If they get a major order that coincidentally only a major car company could give them, then they will produce the batteries. So only the car companies can call their bluff.
Yeah. That one doesn't smell so good.
No. Right. And hence all the interest in lithium ion, because no one controls the patent on that. There are many different lithium chemistries in batteries.
Now, with your plug-in car, can you plug in anywhere? You didn't ask me for power here.
No, I didn't ask you for power. I can plug into any 220-volt plug, which is like a dryer plug.
Right.
In California, there are hundreds of public charging stations. There's one here at the Larkspur Ferry.
Mm-hmm.
There's one at an outlet mall near here.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch in garages in San Francisco. My car can go 125 miles before I need to plug it in.
Yeah.
And that commonly leads to 200-mile days because I can drive up to Santa Rosa or down to Santa Cruz 100 miles away, park, plug in, and by the time I'm done doing whatever I'm doing, the car has enough juice to get home or to the next spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great car.
We're going to take a break and continue. We'll go to the phones in the next segment if you have a question or comment about hybrid cars, about plug-in hybrids, about how to reduce your own dependency on petro products. We'd love to hear from you. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. Also, Phoenix listeners, heads up, in the next segment we'll tell you about Sherry Boschert's appearance in Scottsdale coming up this Saturday. It's all ahead right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's A Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues here, and I'm having a little trouble with my mouse. It's out of control, and I'm trying to tell the computer what to do here. Like, could you play this song, and let's fade this one. Here we go.
Don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
We're talking about you and your automobile, friends, here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was set in the pace? That story is true, I'm here to say, I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up. That Model A body makes it look like a pup's. Got 8 cylinders and uses them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall. With a 4-barrel carb and a dual exhaust, with 411 gears, you can really get lost. Got safety tubes, but I ain't scared. The brakes are good, tires fair. Pulled out of San Pedro late one night. The moon and the stars were shining bright. We was driving up Grapevine Hill, passing cars like they was standing still.
That's Commander Cody and the Lost Planet Airmen, the Hot Rod Lincoln. We're talking about plug-in hybrid vehicles, and in a moment we're going to pause to explain the different types of hybrids and exactly what a plug-in hybrid is. But John in Carmel Valley called, and he's been on hold, and I'm not going to keep him waiting any longer. Hello, John.
Peter, I want to mention something that I use all the time in Salinas, where I don't live, but it's a rather typical town full of stoplights, every type from badly timed lights that will stay against traffic flow when nobody, not even a pedestrian, goes through, to very well timed based on the lights being according to what the traffic flow is. This is a huge problem to where we need more synchronization of lights, but the biggest problem isn't that. It's that nobody, I am one of the rare exceptions, I do this and drive a lot of people crazy by doing it. I look ahead, see what the lights are up to, and I time my speeds as much as I can. And I have found over years of doing this that I improve my odds of whether I have to stop or not, because the whole goal is to not have to stop.
Right.
I figured it's about 65% improved odds. And God knows how much. I haven't figured out how much I actually say, but I know it's a lot.
Now, John,
yeah.
John, do you know that there's a name for this condition?
Craziness is what the public thinks of it.
No, you are a hypermiler. Sherry, you familiar with that term?
No, I haven't heard it.
Fascinating article in the new issue of Mother Jones magazine by Dennis Gaffney. And he profiles some people who have a real obsession with getting maximum mileage from both hybrids and gas-fired vehicles. And this one guy does what he calls the DFAS, draft-assisted forced auto stop. He gets behind an 18-wheeler and turns off his motor and drafts behind him as far as he can. He also does very high-speed turns because he is convinced that braking increases his mileage. And like you, he is obsessed with not stopping for a traffic light if he can possibly avoid it.
Well, and I think that's an obsession that more and more people are going to have, because I've seen it happen in anyone who drives an electric vehicle and even people who are driving the hybrids now, because they get to drive a little bit on electricity. When you do, you become much more conscious of the energy you use, and you start trying to game it.
Mm-hmm.
And electric vehicle drivers are really good at seeing, how far can I coast? EVs are built to coast really well.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Uh-huh. John, pick up Mother Jones, and you'll enjoy that article.
Well, it isn't just, yeah, I will, mm-hmm. but it isn't just the gas savings. City traffic is dynamite because the stopping and the starting and all the drag of gravity and the restarting of the from zero of an engine, engines don't like that. Transmissions don't like that.
The braking, it's also more polluting, yeah.
It's all just so crazy. What appalls me is being profligate is in hugely. We have to switch the whole mindset from thinking it's smart to waste everything. Waste your gas mileage, waste your tire, brake, transmission, you name it, engine wear, and turn that around and make it so it's clearly smart to the average driver that driver, because a lot of people aren't going to do this for global warming. But selfish motive is probably more of a prompter than that.
John, I thought profligacy was a form of safe sex. Thanks for your
call. If we could somehow tie that in, that would be great, too.
Thanks for your call today. George in McKinleyville, you're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks.
Hey, I've got a question for Sherry. I try to keep up on these things and with battery development, and I wonder if she's heard of companies. I'm sure she has the Altair NanoSafe batteries, and Firefly has a carbon foam battery in development, and there's a company called Double E Store that's supposed to have a new battery out.
And you didn't mention A123. There's another one.
A123, right, but they're out selling, true, they're comparable to the Altair.
Ladies and gentlemen, they're talking in code. What does all this mean, Sherry? Are these different types of batteries or just different brands?
These are different battery companies that put out different kinds of brand new batteries, and these are all so new, it's hard to tell really which ones are going to pan out at this point. There's a saying in the electric vehicle world and the battery industry, there's liars, there's damn liars, and then there's battery salesmen. My gut check, and I don't have anything to base this on, really, just all of the hype coming out of Altair Nano just
right.
makes me uneasy. Anyone who hypes it that much, there's got to be something a little weird in that. A123, I think, looks good. It's coming out of MIT. So far, it seems to make sense. But again, we need experience with it. Firefly, the new lead-acid technology, is actually very exciting because that would be really inexpensive.
Yeah, they said a fifth of the price of lithium batteries.
Right, and EE Store has held their cards so close to their chest, no one really
right.
has a sense.
So what about weight and size?
Well, again, it depends on the different chemistries. With the lead acid, like in Firefly or regular lead acid, they're going to be heavier and they're going to store less energy. But they'll be less expensive and they'll have lots of applications if you don't need a long distance.
Mm-hmm.
I would say keep your eye on A123, and I'm just dying to hear something from EE Store, when they're ready to make an announcement.
Now, what about the landfills are filling up with discarded cell phone batteries? Any way we could just, fuse a bunch of those together and turn them into a usable cell?
Well, it's not a bad idea. Most batteries are recycled. More than 98% of lead-acid batteries, the kind that are in every car in America,
mm-hmm.
Are recycled. The ones that aren't is because people don't bring them in. The newer batteries, like nickel metal hydride or lithium, will have valuable components in them. And there's already nickel metal hydride in hybrid cars and elsewhere. There are recycling systems set up. And batteries that, large size batteries that are beyond their useful life for their first application still have other applications. They use used batteries to power, some street lights and other things. So
mm-hmm.
there's uses.
All right. George, anything else?
Yeah, I wanted to say I do agree with Sherry about using the nickel metal hydride batteries in that new GM proposed car, the Volt.
The Volt, uh-huh. Yeah, why not? Come on, bring it on. We're ready.
Yeah, I think why not? Right, exactly. The technology's here. Let's just get it on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good.
All right, thank you, George. Now to Deborah in Phoenix, thanks for your call. You're on the air with Peter B. and Sherry Boschert.
Hi, I've got two questions for Sherry. My first question, I was thinking as you describe in your car, you drive from place to place and plug in.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody invented a mobile plug-in station, or is that even possible to do?
You mean with a generator? Or?
Yeah. I mean, if you've got a situation where you couldn't make it to the next place and you ran out of power.
Well, that is exactly what a plug-in hybrid is, because what we were talking about earlier is my all-electric car, where after a certain point, I'm out of electricity, I have to stop and plug into the grid somewhere. But with a plug-in hybrid, you have a backup generator, backup gasoline tank, a backup something, so when you run out of electricity, you can turn on that engine and either run the car on gasoline or use that gasoline or ethanol or biodiesel to recharge the batteries.
That's your backup system.
Exactly. The Chevy Volt that GM unveiled on Sunday, it can go 40 miles on electricity, and when you run out of electricity, the generator comes on and recharges the batteries. The total distance the car can go is about 560 miles.
Oh, wow. Just one sec,
Deborah. I wanted to interject. Doesn't some of this approach perpetual motion machines, and isn't that impossible? That's what I was told when I was 10, and I tried to develop one of my own.
Yeah, I mean, well, even with these cars, after a point, you have to stop and get some new fuel in there some way, whether it's electricity or the gasoline or biodiesel or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people ask me all the time, too, well, why don't we put a solar panel on the car? Wouldn't that do it? Well, it would look nice, but it would really only provide enough charge for, say, your auxiliary battery. It couldn't run the car.
All right. Deborah, go ahead.
Now, my second question is, a couple years ago, and I think it was a dealer who told me this, because I live in Phoenix, and I was interested in the Toyota Prius. And he said, oh, that's not good for Phoenix, because in the summer, when it gets so hot, when you stop, and you run the air conditioner, and you use gasoline to do that. So you're really not getting the full benefit. Is that true?
What car was this again?
The Prius.
Oh, the Prius.
Uh-huh.
Right, the hybrid. Yeah,
right.
Cars like the Prius and other hybrids are the best, most efficient cars out there, but they are dependent on gasoline. And so the way the car is designed is this interplay where they use some electrical components to kind of boost the performance of the gas car. But you can't run it without gasoline. It mostly runs on gasoline.
So if you're in a place that the temperatures are real hot, like in the summer, and your air conditioner is really working hard and running constantly, is that going to be less cost-effective than in a city with a more moderate temperature?
With the regular hybrid, I don't know. To be honest, I'm not an expert on the gas cars. In a plug-in hybrid, it changes the scenario. You have a lot more electricity to run on. And in a hybrid like the Prius, you can drive maybe 1 kilometer on electricity before it has to use gasoline. With a plug-in hybrid, you'll have at least 40 miles of electricity. It's a whole different scenario.
Well, Deborah, this is going to be up in about a year, and I just really want to get some kind of fuel-efficient car.
Deborah, 2 points. One is, pick up Mother Jones. Read this Hypermiler article. One of the things this guy does is, in the summer, he wears a frozen vest. He puts his vest, it's got water pockets in it, he puts it in the freezer, and then he gets in his unair-conditioned car and drives around with it on.
Yeah, so, well, in 115-degree temperatures, that'll last about 3 blocks.
Right, and leave a puddle.
Yeah, right.
Deborah, why don't you hang on? Matt will get your address, and may we send you a copy of Sherry's book?
Sure.
All right, we'll do that. It's called Plug-in Hybrids, and we'll put one in the mail to you.
Okay.
All right, hold on. And by the way, to George and John, I meant to offer you guys a book, and I forgot. So if you want one, call back, and Matt will get your address, and we'll set you up with one. Let's go to Mike in Coos Bay, Oregon next. Hello, Mike. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. This is Mike calling from the North Bend of Coos Bay. And in regard to an electric car, you know, at one level, it makes an awful lot of sense to me to have a plug-in hybrid in a big city like San Francisco or Phoenix. But, you know, the big question is, where's the electricity going to come from? Because if it comes from a coal plant or a nuclear plant, I wonder if we're really saving anything over what we're currently doing with gasoline.
Mike, I don't want to offend you here, but can you repeat after me? Nuclear.
Nuclear.
Thank you.
Mike, I am so glad you asked this question because it's the question that I researched the most heavily for my book because I'm a greenie environmentalist at heart, and I wanted to be sure I was doing the right thing. So I collected every study, every analysis I could find on what's called well-to-wheels emissions, not just emissions from the car, because electric cars don't have a tailpipe, but the power plants or making the gasoline, because gasoline just doesn't come out of nowhere either. And what I found, I put in Chapter 7 of my book in an easy-to-read format, but it's also up on my website, sherrybochert.com, where I list all the studies. And I feel very comfortable in saying that even on the current U.S. grid, which is more than 50% coal, ugly, dirty coal, it is way cleaner to drive a plug-in car, whether it's a plug-in hybrid or all-electric. And we do need to clean up the grid further, like we need to clean up cars, but the two will work hand-in-hand to do that. We're putting in more solar and more wind. The grid gets cleaner. Gasoline just gets dirtier over time.
You could also make the case that however polluted it is, the electrical generation is already there, and your gasoline car adds to emissions where plugging into the grid is at minimum neutral.
And the other thing is, it's a lot easier to regulate emissions from a few thousand power plants than from over 200 million car tailpipes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Would you like a copy of the book?
Sure.
All right. Hold on.
I want to confess that I became a hypermiler.
Oh, you're one of those.
When I got a Honda Insight, and the thing that made me a hypermiler is its gas mileage computer that's right on board.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If that was available in all the cars, it might make a difference for a lot of people.
Yeah, I gotcha. It also might cause more accidents because people watch it all the time. Michael,
that's true.
Hold on. We'll get your address. Send
your
book.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling into the program today. More of your calls coming up in just a moment. For Sherry Boschert, not Boschert, you can call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a Bible solution. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey. PG.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, if you made my whole life, for the foolish things I did, you may wonder how come I love you when you get on my nerves like you do. But baby, you know you love me. There ain't no secret about that.
Well, Mary Kay Ash proved you can get a pink Cadillac, but can you get a green Cadillac? Sherry Boschert is with us. Plug-in Hybrids, the cars that will recharge America, is the name of her brand new book. And to my knowledge, Cadillac's not producing a hybrid, are they?
No, not that I know of. Not yet.
Yeah. Now, you're going to be in Scottsdale. Why don't you give our Phoenix area listeners a rundown this Saturday night at 7 o'clock
You're going to be speaking, and this is at the Granite Reef Senior Center. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's Scottsdale's new LEED building. It's their green building.
Mm-hmm. And your subject will be?
Plug-in hybrid. And for those of you in Phoenix, that's at 1700 North Granite Reef Road. It'll be hosted by the local Electric Auto Association.
All right. And that's 7 p.m. Saturday in Scottsdale. I hope some of our listeners will stop by and let Sherry know you heard about it here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Got more callers here, but before we go to them, I wanted to ask you just for a brief description, because in your book you lay it out here very clearly, the difference between a hybrid electric vehicle, an HEV, a PHEV, which is a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, or a pure battery electric vehicle, a BEV.
Okay. Let's start with the electric vehicle, because that's the simplest.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a gas engine. It just runs on batteries, and an electric motor, a controller, and a charger. So you have the batteries that put electricity in there to the electric motor that turns the wheels. The hybrid electric vehicle is basically a gas car that borrowed some of those electrical components. So it has a few little bitty batteries. It does have an electric motor, but it mostly runs on gasoline. You cannot run a hybrid car without gasoline.
Right.
Now, the plug-in hybrid combines the two. It runs ideally initially on electricity, but then when you run out of electricity, you've got that insurance policy of the gas tank as a backup to let you go further.
Mm-hmm.
There's different kinds. You know, there's blended ones where they kind of work together all the time, or there's series ones like the new Chevy Volt that was unveiled that runs on electricity and just uses the gas to recharge the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So different flavors of those, but the plug-in hybrid is the combination of the two.
All right. And currently, are there manufactured plug-in hybrids, or are most people converting them in the so-called aftermarket?
Well, there's no one actually making a plug-in hybrid right now. What people have seen perhaps in the media are activists that have done it themselves.
Yeah.
Here in Pelosi country in Corte Madera, in Ron Gremman's garage, a nonprofit group called CalCars at calcars.org did the first public conversion of a Prius to a plug-in Prius.
Mm-hmm.
It has simple bicycle lead-acid batteries, and it gets over 100 miles per gallon.
Wow.
And so there's about 20 of those in the world right now, done as demonstrations for fleets and cities, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But we're waiting for the car companies, and with General Motors unveiling the Volt, that's the starting gun. And I would encourage anyone who's thinking of buying a new car within the next few years, hold off. Go to pluginamerica.com. You'll find the phone numbers for the major car companies. Call them up and say, I want a car with a plug on it.
Mm-hmm.
I want a car that gets 100 miles per gallon, and I'm not going to buy one until you give me one.
Here's Scott, our contributor, who will be on with us very soon. He joins us today from Carmel. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing well.
Hey, Peter. She said 220, the magic voltage, when she was talking about how she recharges her batteries.
Right.
After living in Europe for 12 years, I love 220. It's a lot more efficient, water boils quicker. And in America, the 220 plug, I converted a couple plugs over to operate my 220 appliances I brought back from Europe, and it's not rocket science. And the 220 plugs has 110 coming out of each side, and then there's a ground. So any electrician in about an hour could run a 220 plug to anywhere that a person wanted to plug their car into. So people shouldn't be intimidated when she said 220 or 240. It's not a big deal.
And, mm-hmm. and it's interesting you brought that up because, again, we were talking about my all-electric car. The all-electrics use 220 because it charges faster than a 120. But the plug-in hybrids are going to be designed, I think, initially to run on a regular 110-volt wall socket like you can find anywhere. Because the whole idea with the plug-in hybrids is you never have to think about where you're going to plug in. You just get home at night, plug it into your regular wall socket, and it charges while you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So for convenience, that's going to be the next wave, I think.
And Peter, just let me jump in one more thing, then I'll get off, is that anybody who lives in Alaska knows that if you go to Anchorage, every establishment everywhere has a plug-in, so people can plug their block heaters in.
Yeah, in parking mm-hmm. lots everywhere.
Yeah. All right, Scott, thank you. I appreciate that.
Welcome.
Demystifying 220. Now to Sherry in Phoenix. Got just a minute, Sherry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just calling in response to the previous caller from Phoenix who had a dealer who talked her out of buying a hybrid because of the use of air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And we have one. We've had it for about a year, and our mileage is identical in the summer and in the winter.
Really?
So.
And so when you're stalled at a light, does the gas engine go off and does the air conditioning stay on?
Yeah, it stays on. We didn't have a problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
And And we use the air conditioning probably 9 months out of the year
yeah.
in the car.
Okay. Well, Sherry, I wish I had more time. Did you want a copy of the book?
Sure.
Okay. Hold on. We'll get your address and mail it to you. Thanks for your call here. Sherry Boschert, thank you for joining us. Plug-in Hybrids is the book, The Cars That Will Recharge America. As we mentioned, she's appearing this Saturday night, 7 p.m. in Scottsdale at the Granite Reef Senior Center. And it's a real pleasure to meet you. I'll see you on the road.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Sherry. That concludes this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Thank you for joining us. And if you would like to log on to our website, peterbcollins.com, that's where you can find a link to our archived programs and get more information.
This is Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunetarealestate.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The president speaks in 2 hours.
An admission of mistakes and sending more troops to Iraq. I'm Mark Noller at the White House.
The House votes to raise the minimum wage.
The yeas are 315. The nays are 116.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush's speech to the nation could mark a turning point in the war. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller joins us live with a preview.
With America nearing the end of 4 years at war in Iraq, President Bush will concede that mistakes were made there. And to address those failures in policy, he'll announce a new strategy that calls for increasing the number of U.S. forces in Iraq by about 22,000. He briefed congressional leaders on the plan, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi emerged unpersuaded.
The American people have lost confidence in the president's policy. We're hopeful that tonight he will restore that confidence.
Pelosi also complained that she was merely being notified and not consulted about the new strategy, which includes a stern message for the Iraqi government. President Bush will serve notice to Iraqi leaders that America's commitment is not open-ended. He will call on them to act more forcefully to end the sectarian violence or risk losing American support. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Noller, CBS News.
Prime Minister Maliki, in turn, is putting the Shiite militias on notice, telling them to disarm or face an all-out assault. CBS News correspondent David Martin reports the buildup will begin later this month.
The plan would more than double the number of American troops in Baghdad. The capital will be divided into 9 districts, and a battalion, about 800 soldiers, will be sent into each one to operate with Iraqi forces, clearing out insurgents and death squads. Unlike previous operations, the Americans will stay in the neighborhoods until reconstruction teams can restore water and electricity and put unemployed Iraqis back to work.
Now this.
Is your office in disarray? Can't find what you need? Well, Office Depot has great deals on file folders, binders, filing cabinets, shredders, and storage containers. Plus, we have over 800 calendars and planners to keep you up to date. So hurry in. Let Office Depot lend you a hand getting organized. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Well, Office Depot!
Drift away, 'cause here we're living for today. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of the day.
Mailbag Tonight, where fresh R.T. Turner is seasoned, seared, and served on a bed of crisp remain. Start the new year fresh. Leave your worries at the door.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life will still be there tomorrow.
Go out back.
One of the most dangerous places in Iraq is Anbar province, but CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick, who traveled there today, found a hopeful sign. Iraqis are joining the police in large numbers.
We're good. Keep going.
Yeah.
I am in door.
Their training is conducted by Iraqi commanders, with Americans looking on. A year ago, Ramadi had no police force. Most of its police stations had been destroyed. U.S. troops negotiated with a single police commander to stay on the job. But now tribal sheikhs have urged their followers to sign up. The sheikhs have pledged to work with thousands more U.S. troops to combat al-Qaeda forces here. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Ramadi.
Correspondent Bob Fuss has today's big news on Capitol Hill.
Rolling over Republican opposition as they push their first 100-hour agenda, House Democrats passed an increase in the minimum wage, the first in 10 years, to slowly bump the federal minimum from $5.15 an hour to $7.25. Connecticut Democrat Rosa DeLauro.
We have an obligation to work to raise the standard of living in America for every single family, not just for the few at the top of the heap.
Republicans insist companies that hire minimum wage workers will need tax breaks and other help to pay the increase. It's likely some benefits for small business will be added to this bill when it gets to the Senate. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Real estate is all about location, and residents of the Briny Breezes Trailer Park are in a prime location, 43 acres on the oceanfront in South Florida. Today they voted overwhelmingly to accept a developer's offer of more than $500 million.
Nobody really wants to leave Briny, but you have to use your common sense.
None of us want to leave Briny, but when you look at the facts, and you look at the situation, the infrastructure, what's going to be done here, it's a no-brainer. You got to sell.
Most owners will get more than $1 million. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
Just kick back for the moment. Let your worries drift away, cause here we're living for today. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of the day. Go out back tonight, where fresh R.T. Turner is seasoned, seared, and served on a bed of crisp remain. Start the new year fresh. Leave your worries at the door.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life will still be there tomorrow.
Go out back.
We're launching another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. Just about 2 hours from now, the man who is our president will talk to the nation, and Tony Snow promises us that the word surge will not pop up in the president's text. I prefer escalation. I think that's a more honest term. And coming up later this hour, Larissa Alexandrovna will join us. She's going to talk about why John Negroponte accepted that demotion to the State Department. But first, we're going to talk about the War Powers Act with somebody who knows more than I do.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road.
John Quigley is a professor of law at Ohio State University. He's the author of numerous books, including Ruses for War, American Interventionalism Since World War II. And he joins us from Columbus, Ohio today. Professor, thank you for talking with us.
Hello, yes.
Nice to speak with you. Sorry about the Gators.
Yes. Nobody's talking about that around here these days.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm the skunk at the garden party. Well, Professor, I appreciate you joining us because yesterday I was musing with our listeners that given that the Democrats seem unwilling to use the obvious leverage they have in terms of budgeting for the war and putting strict restrictions on the use of funding going forward, That's one way that this escalation could be limited or perhaps prevented. That perhaps a sounder approach that might draw a more unified Democratic caucus is to address these issues under the War Powers Act and the War Powers authorities of the Constitution. And I turn to you for guidance on this. I've never been to law school and don't want to offer any pretense of that. But my understanding is that, and I take this from no less than Senator John Warner, who just ended his role as chair of the Armed Services Committee in the Senate, that the president is out of compliance with the original authorization to use military force, and that in particular this escalation of troop commitments triggers some clauses of the Constitution and or the War Powers Act that should require him to at least obtain a new authorization for what he will propose tonight.
Well, I think that's right. The authorization that the president has dates to 2002. And I should preface this by saying this is an authorization from Congress. It doesn't necessarily make the war legal in the international sense. That's a completely separate question. And regardless of what Congress did in 2002, there really wasn't a basis in the international setting for going to war against Iraq. So the war was illegal from the beginning. So in that sense, we're talking about illegalities within illegality when we talk about the surge.
And I have no dispute with you there. I do believe the origins of the war are not legal and that, you know, the president is simply compounding his misdeeds.
But in terms of what Congress did, in 2002, it adopted a resolution saying the president is authorized to use the armed forces of the United States as he determines to be necessary and appropriate in order to defend the national security of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq. I mean, at that time, there was the thought that Iraq had nuclear weapons and was going to use them against the United States eventually. And of course, we found out that those weapons didn't exist. And, of course, the government that was in place in Iraq at the time is not in existence anymore. So that's the basis, I think, for saying that the 2002 authorization has lapsed.
And it was fallacious, which, of course, has nothing to do with oral sex, but should be impeachable.
I think that's right. Certainly the information that was put forward by the president to take the country to war on a basis that didn't really exist would be viewed as an impeachable offense.
Okay. So currently we have a situation that is not reflected even remotely by the language of that authorization from November of 2002. And we have a police action of a civil war, which is a more accurate description of what the U.S. mission is there. On that set of facts alone, does the president need to go back to Congress, as Senator Warner has suggested, and get a renewed authorization for the deployment of U.S. troops, even those who are currently there?
I think that's probably right. Of course, I mean, Congress hasn't insisted on its powers, which lets the president get away with things a bit in this regard. Certainly, you know, if I were in Congress looking at that 2002 resolution, I would say that whatever that authorized has already occurred, and there isn't really a basis for having the troops there any longer without some new kind of authorization from Congress.
And where is the language that permits the president to commit U.S. forces without a declaration of war? Is that in the War Powers Act from the late 1970s?
That's the War Powers Resolution from 1973.
73.
Yeah, which itself was a bit controversial because the constitutional order on this is that the Congress is supposed to decide when to go to war. The Constitution doesn't say anything about a 60-day period when the president can use troops at the president's discretion. That is, the Constitution says the president is the commander-in-chief and is to fight wars, but is not to make the determination as to when to go to war. That's to be done by Congress. So when Congress in 1973 adopted the War Powers Resolution, in my view, it was giving the president more power than the president really has under the Constitution. But still, if you take that as the base for argumentation, the president does need to get Congress's authorization within 60 days after committing troops. Arguably, the president had the 2002 authorization in place when he introduced troops, but one of the clauses of the War Powers Resolution says that it is triggered when you have troops already in another country, but the president makes a substantial increase in their numbers. And that's why with this increase of 20,000, there's a strong basis for saying that the War Powers Resolution is kind of re-invoked, and what it says is that when it is invoked, the president has 60 days, and if within those 60 days the Congress does not declare war or issue some kind of authorization tantamount to a declaration of war, then the president has no authorization to keep those troops there.
Now, we understand that the word surge has been stricken from the text, but the original depiction of this, starting with the trial balloons of 2 to 3 weeks ago, was that this was going to be a significant increase, but short term. What we understand the president is going to propose is really a trickle of new deployments to Iraq with excessive retention of both National Guard and regular service members who are already in Iraq. And so the total number, the net number of troops will increase above the 140 or 145,000 level it's at today. But, you know, this is going to be incremental. Is that by design in order to try to slip past the increase in troops that you cited as part of the War Powers Resolution?
Well, I don't think, reading this fairly, that that would really get the president around this provision in the War Powers Resolution. I mean, that War Powers Resolution talks about a significant increase. It says, in the absence of declaration of war, in any case in which the armed forces are introduced in numbers which substantially enlarge United States armed forces equipped for combat already located in a foreign nation. So it talks about a substantial increase. It doesn't talk about whether you keep people there and add on to them, or whether you bring some of them home and replace them.
And is 12 or 15% on the face of it substantial in your view?
I would say so. One could argue about that. If it's now 140,000 and it's going to be 160,000, I suppose the president could say, well, that's not substantial. But, you know, 20,000 people is I think, substantial.
I also put it in the context that we have at least 100,000 contractors there, many of whom are mercenaries or, you know, some sort of paid non-uniformed soldiers. And that if you take this increase as a percentage of the overall number of American service members and contractors, that it may not trigger that term substantial.
Well, the War Powers Resolution talks in terms of armed forces. I think they weren't thinking about, you know, privatized armies at the time when they adopted this. So I'm not sure that those numbers would be added in.
All right, Professor, we're going to take a break and return in just a moment. Professor John Quigley from Ohio State University School of Law is with us. And if you have a question or comment about this War Powers Resolution and how it applies to the current situation and whether it should be a weapon used by the Democrats to help stop this misguided president, you should call right now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll continue in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Just arrived, Carmel a Treasure. A first combination calendar, history book with souvenir maps, archiving Carmel today. Entirely rendered in watercolors by Lisa Bryan, this brilliant calendar and book combo captures the charm of Carmel. A special gift, now available at Lisa's studio in Court of the Fountains and other bookstores and gift shops in Carmel. For more information, call Lisa Bryan at 626-5435, 626-5435.
Looking at your traffic, we're going to start in Aromas, northbound 101 at 156. We have a two-vehicle accident cleared over to the right-hand shoulder. Watch out for a table in the right-hand lane in Marina. It's northbound 1 before 12th Street. And Broomdale, 156 at Meridian Road. We have a dump truck on fire. This is actually in the roadway. No lane information just yet, so fire crews and CHP en route to check that out. An injury accident in San Ardo, southbound 101 after Alvarado Road. This is a car that actually went off the roadway and overturned. There's a reports of debris all across the roadway, especially in that right-hand lane, so do watch out for that. Again, it's southbound 101 after Alvarado Road. This report is brought to you by Mancini Sleep World. Save big during Mancini Sleep World truckload mattress sale. They'll beat anyone's advertised price by 10% or your mattress is free. Call 800-64-SLEEP and start sleeping better tonight. I'm Diana with traffic, KRXA 540.
Continues with law professor John Quigley from Ohio State. That's Neil Young from Living with War. It's called Let's Impeach the President. As I mentioned, we're talking with OSU Professor John Quigley. And, Professor, do you believe that the grounds for impeachment of this president exist?
Well, I think they probably do. In general, the grounds for impeachment are not all that set in stone, that is, as to what does or does not constitute. a ground for impeachment. But when the president acts in ways contrary to what Congress has called for on a matter of such significance, that would seem to be a ground for impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
And when the president acts to take the country to war in violation of the international rules that we and other nations have agreed to,
mm-hmm.
that I think is as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, clarify for me, if you will, is there a distinction between the War Powers Resolution of 1973 that we were talking about in the preceding segment and what I have referred to as the War Powers Act?
No.
Okay.
There's not.
All right.
The resolution is a term that Congress used at the time, but it became part of the U.S. Code, so it is sometimes referred to as the War Powers Act.
Mm-hmm. And I take from our earlier chat here that you believe that it was a failure on the part of the Republican-controlled Congress to assert its constitutional role in the decision to go to war. Is that something that the Democrats can fix, in your view, either by asserting what we discussed a few minutes ago, that any escalation or changes in this war require a new authorization?
Well, I think it is something the Democrats could deal with. When you say it was the Republicans that allowed the situation to happen, I mean, it was the Democrats as well that went along with this resolution in the year 2002. But of course, when it did become clear that the basis for the whole operation was pretextual, that at that point the Republicans, being in control, didn't do anything about it, and the Democrats probably couldn't have. But now I think they are in a position where they could do something under the War Powers Resolution. If Congress at any time adopts what is called a concurrent resolution calling for withdrawal of the troops, then the president is required to withdraw them.
Mm-hmm. Let's imagine that I had Speaker Pelosi on a conference call here and could bring her into this chat right now. What advice would you give her about the best way to deal with the president on the matter of escalation?
Well, it could be dealt with through the War Powers Resolution, through invoking it. I mean, actually, there isn't really anything for the Congress to do to invoke it. It's automatic when there is a substantial increase. If the Congress doesn't vote for war within 60 days, then there's no basis for the continuation. In that sense, there isn't any need for legislation, although there would probably be some controversy as to whether the War Powers Resolution is indeed implicated by the increase of 20,000. So Congress could adopt a resolution saying that this is an act that does implicate the War Powers Resolution. The other thing, of course, it could do is simply to deal with it as a funding matter, because mm-hmm. the president can't keep these troops there, can't introduce more troops without having more money, and the president keeps bringing up these supplemental bills for funding.
Right. Are you familiar with the Denis Kucinich 10-point plan? He essentially says we've got enough money already committed to bring the troops home, and so we can cut off funding for the war without actually, hurting the troops.
Well, yes. I don't think that there would be any danger to the troops in doing that.
It's the political target it creates.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I'm sensitive to that. I'm one of those people who, believes this is an illegal and immoral war, and that the Democrats have a mandate to end it as soon as possible. But I'm also very conscious of how clever and ruthless this administration is. And I have a sense that, if you recall back after the Vietnam War, Curtis LeMay was complaining that if they just let him nuke Vietnam, we would have won. And I have a sense that there's a bit of a trap here, that the Republicans want to lay this for the Democrats so the Democrats can be blamed for denying victory to this president.
Yes, I mean, I think that's why the Democrats went along in 2002. They were afraid that the president was doing something that would turn out to be very popular, and that they wouldn't have been on the bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
I think they more or less checked their brains in at the time, because if they had looked at it objectively, they would have understood that there wasn't a real basis for going to war.
How right you are. We take a call now, Mike in Glendale. Hello, Mike. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Professor John Quigley.
Yes. Hi, Peter and Professor.
Hi.
Isn't it time we had a discussion of where the Constitution really, you know, where that comes in here? Correct me if I'm wrong. When the U.S. Senate ratified the UN treaty, didn't they basically surrender their right to declare war? You know, Congress's obligation, in fact, to declare war.
Our time is tight, Mike, so let's go right to the professor.
Sure.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, the UN Charter did give extensive powers to the Security Council of the United Nations to make determinations about going to war, but, of course, the United States was became a member of that Security Council with veto power. And also the Charter preserved for states the right to use force in self-defense if they were attacked by another state, so it didn't completely give powers away.
Mike, thank you for that call. Wish we had more time. Professor, thank you for your time today, and we'll talk again.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's Professor John Quigley at Ohio State University School of Law. I'm Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Never mind if it doesn't work. What if it does work? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. And here in Washington, D.C., the stage is set for Iraq Take Two. Tonight, America takes a break from debating Barack Obama's body mass index to hear President Bush try to convince a country that wants the troops to come home that the best way to get them home is to send more. Congressman Adam Smith, whose committee deals with terrorism, was among the Democrats invited to the White House for a briefing. And his concern isn't only what happens if the surge doesn't work, but what happens if it does work. What happens if the violence actually stops?
Where have the insurgents gone? Surely we haven't rounded all of them up.
Huh. Hadn't considered that. The bad guys melted away once before. Suppose they do it again, and then just come back when the surge is over. Unless the surge is never over. In that meeting, along with the president, were Condoleezza Rice, the new defense secretary, Robert Gates, and Karl Rove. And I asked the congressman what their attitude was like.
They are determined to see this through. They are convinced that this is the best path. But I did sense a lot more wariness than what we had seen in years gone by on this issue. No strutting across an aircraft carrier with mission accomplished.
But are they sure that what they're doing is right?
They definitely, the president is aware that this is by no means guaranteed. They just think that it is the best choice in a bad situation.
I hate to think what their other options must have been. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging.
And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now
and ask for your free trial.
Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio.
It's tax time again. And there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel at Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax return tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to take a copy of your 2005 federal and California returns and W-2 1099 info for 2006. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today at 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there, without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
No, but sending more troops to Iraq, that would make you crazy. Making me crazy. Thank you, Gnarls Barkley. 34 minutes past the hour. It's time for our weekly briefing from Larissa Alexandrovna. She's the managing news editor at rawstory.com. She blogs at the Huffington Post and her own blog at largely.com. Hey, Larissa.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing okay today, and you?
Good, I'm good. I'm waiting for the speech.
Yeah, it's...
Not that I'll be surprised.
Well, they've leaked everything, including I was so disappointed to read that Tony Snow has declared that the word surge will not appear in the president's text.
That's good to know. I wonder what they've renamed it to.
Yeah, they can't use escalation.
Well, I actually had a poll where I was trying to rename it to something.
Yeah?
And I think the best thing I could come up with was executive voltage.
Yeah, executive voltage. We're going to turn up the juice.
Yeah.
Well, and events are not cooperating with the wayward president because every day in Iraq, yesterday in Baghdad, this huge showdown just a half mile from the Green Zone on Haifa Street. And, you know, this shootout all day long. And it just shows how ineffective American forces are at separating the warring parties there in Iraq. And that we are a key target.
Yes, well...
All that is so obvious.
Yes, it is. But you know my position on why we're surging, as it were. So
why don't you restate that for the benefit of...
Well, I don't think we're surging for Iraq. I think we're building up troops in the region for what we're preparing to do in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew there would be a surge, and I was right. the surge thing has been known. They had made up their minds over at the White House quite a while back. I'm not sure what the stalling tactics were about, but again, I have my own private theories on that. Namely, that I believe they're waiting for all the key pieces to fall into position.
Yeah. Now, on your blog over the weekend, there was some fascinating stuff related to the Times of London's disclosure of war games or preparations by Israel for an attack on Iran, and the story explicitly mentioned the use by Israel of nuclear weapons in order to destroy the potential nuclear capabilities of Iran.
Right.
And I wanted to just follow up because you went into a pretty interesting analysis of why this was leaked and whether it's credible. And I believe you concluded at the time that based on the information then that you thought it was credible and you had a couple of theories about why it was leaked. Do you still hold that view?
Well, I do actually, despite the way it's been handled and certainly despite the attacks on the Times of London, I do hold that view because it's the only other option, really, or interpretation is that the the Saudis planted the story. Israel wouldn't have planted a story that makes themselves look like the culprit, even if it is to, let's say, saber rattling. It is so aggressive, and using nukes is so something so not in the norm of warfare, whatever the norm is, but so out there. And the fact that Israel isn't supposed to have nukes, even.
Right. I mean, that was one of the things.
It would appear to incriminate them in something they don't want to be incriminated in.
Right. That was the alarm that went off for me, is just
right.
We know that Olmert recently had a slip where, in listing the nuclear and non-nuclear powers in his region, he included Israel. But this seemed so forward.
Aggressive.
Yeah, to be suggesting not only that Israel would attack, that's not terribly surprising, but that they would contemplate using a nuke when they have this elaborate game they play that we have nukes but we'll never admit it.
Right, and that actually puts them in violation of various anti-proliferation acts. So, again, I don't see why they would plant a story that is formally Israel, the government. Now, leaking is a whole other matter. People who leak usually leak, especially in circumstances like this, because they don't agree with what is going on, and they want to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a leak, it seems more credible to me than a planted story to rattle saber rattling. I also don't think that the U.S. would have planted the story, because then... It obviously implies that if Israel has nukes, it got them from the U.S.
Well, the other aspect of this is it's a dual-track thing, that by whoever floated this story that Israel might attack, maybe trying to goad the United States into doing it to because there are certain reasons why we would prefer to do it than have Israel do it.
Sure.
And on the other hand, it could be someone either in the Israeli government or acting, they think, on its best interests, trying to assert Israeli independence here, and also to send a signal to the White House that, we're here and we're aggressive and we're willing to take this on, too. So I don't have a clear thought about why it actually surfaced, but those are kind of two competing ideas.
Sure. I mean, I've considered all of those. But again, I think Israel doesn't need to send a message to the White House. It's fairly well known that the White House is under Likudnik control, if you will. And that's pretty well known around the world. There's no reason to send a message. And even if Israel wasn't involved with America in terms of planning any of this, it would still be believed around the world that Israel was leading this fight. So I don't think it's necessary for Israel to take that kind of position.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I the only people, as I said, that would benefit from this type of planted story, in my opinion, are the Saudis, because then they can pressure both sides to act.
Mm-hmm.
Or the only other option I see is that it is a credible leak. And, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. Unfortunately, when you're talking about nuclear weapons, that's not something you want to do. But, this is not something I could confirm, because my sources wouldn't be deep enough in that kind of Israeli intelligence to be able to provide me with information and do it across the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fairly dangerous. So I simply don't know. But I do believe it is a credible story.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because of these reasons. Now, could I be wrong? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But,
now, did you see any coverage in the U.S. MSM, mainstream media? I saw the coverage on the Internet. I saw the story from the Times of London. I saw various commentaries, all web-based. But I can't recall seeing anything on TV or reading in the Times or other papers that I peruse anything about this.
No, I did see it in the papers. I did not see it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I don't watch TV often, so it's quite possible I could have missed it. No, the AP took this head-on, debunking it. Although if you look at the denials made, they're really not awfully strong considering the accusations.
Right. Tony Snow did simply just reject it as ridiculous.
Right, right. But moreover, the the Omar wouldn't comment. To me, you know, if this were not true, I'd probably be standing, you know, atop a mountain somewhere screaming it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is it's something that could provoke a regional war just by the information getting out. It is a dangerous story. And when you see a dangerous story like that, I'd prefer to give the reporter the benefit of the doubt and believe that they've done their homework, because it really could get you killed to write something like that.
Yeah. We're talking with Larissa Alexandrovna, who is alive and well. She writes for RawStory.com and other outlets. We spoke to Colonel Sam Gardner the other day. In fact, on Monday, just after all of this surfaced, he found the report relatively credible, quite troubling, and, can't quite put all the pieces together, but did also mention that the carrier group Stennis is steaming for the Persian Gulf. They've
right.
been shipped out of Seattle, I think, or Bremerton in the last few weeks. And so we at least see the elements shaping up of some sort of confrontation with Iran.
Right, and what alarms me is that I've seen no coverage of this, with the exception of a few reporters here and there, most notably Cy Hirsch and then, you know, myself and maybe a couple of others. There has been zero coverage of this, zero. And that is very alarming to me, because you can see this thing building up. You can see it happening. You can see the political pushing of the proverbial buttons, if you will. You can see that there's an Iranian directorate that's been set up in the Pentagon that's not unlike the Office of Special Plans. You can see all this happening, perhaps not as well as we saw it in the build-up toward Iraq, but we have the benefit here of that experience to be able to identify these markers.
I would add the marker of the appointment of Admiral Fallon to head CENTCOM, and that would put a Navy person in charge of Iraq, Afghanistan, and presumably any attack on Iran. Sam Gardner did play that down a little bit, saying that he thought that most of the attacks on Iran would come from land air bases and missiles that would come off ships, but he didn't see a central role for the Navy.
Right. I mean, he's always maintained that.
Mm-hmm.
And I for one don't know. I mean, that's the most likely way they would handle a strike on Iran, and it's really the only way we have left, because we're stretched so thin. I mean, we just deployed 20 stealth fighters to South Korea to monitor the North Korean tests of their so-called nuclear weapons. I mean, we're bombing Somalia. We are stretched so thin that the only way they could really pull this off would be an aerial strike. So, yeah, I agree. And the timing appears to be the original, if you remember a while back, I reported and others had that the Joint Chiefs had said, look, if you're going to do this, we can't do this before spring of 2007. And then in March of last year, something changed, and they were attempting to speed it up, and then there was a fallback, and it appeared that nothing was happening. And now it appears more on track with the Joint Chiefs' assessment of when the soonest possible time frame this could be done. And frankly, if you look at what's happening, it appears that they're lining up the pieces, and yet this is not being reported. And it's alarming. It's negligent, frankly.
Yes, it is. We're going to take a break and return with Larissa Alexandrovna. And we've got one caller on the line. If you'd like to join us with a question or comment, do it now. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-5-PETER-B. And as we continue, we'll ask Larissa to explain what she knows about the demotion that John Negroponte has accepted and maybe some of the reasons why. It's all ahead right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
We have a two-vehicle accident in Aromas. It's southbound 101 at 156. Both those vehicles have been cleared over to the right-hand shoulder. And an injury accident in Santa Cruz. This is southbound 17 at Highway 1. A couple of vehicles involved in this. One vehicle actually blocking the left-hand lane. Three other vehicles involved in this accident are on the right-hand shoulder. So CHP is on scene. Emergency crews en route for that. In Gilroy, watch out for a large box in the middle lane, northbound 101 at Monterey Street. And San Ardo, southbound 101 after Alvarado Road. An earlier minor injury accident involving a vehicle that actually went off the roadway. This has been cleared, so it should be free flowing through that area. This report brought to you by Mancini Sleep World. Save big during Mancini Sleep World's truckload mattress sale. They'll beat anyone's advertised price by 10% or your mattress is free. Call 800-64-SLEEP and start sleeping better tonight. I'm Diane with traffic, KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 10 minutes away from the hour. We're talking with Larissa Alexandrovna, managing news editor at rawstory.com, and we're joined by Barbara from Cave Creek in Arizona. Hello, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a little skeptical about this whole situation.
That's quite appropriate, Barbara.
Well, I'm skeptical about the role that they're trying to make. Israel is sitting in the middle of the place and has probably had defensive mechanisms in place for years and years as far as what they would do if.
Sure.
They always have a what if. What if this happens, then this.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that at the end of November, after Cheney went to Saudi Arabia, everything changed. He got his marching orders, and it would behoove Saudi Arabia to have Iran to have a limited strike by anybody, and then everybody go after Israel. I mean, I would say that Bush could take the ships and attack Iran and say it was Israel, and everybody can go after Israel, Iran and Israel, and then Saudi Arabia and the Bush Saud and House of Bush get all the oil.
All right, go ahead, Larissa.
Well, I mean, I've long argued that, in general, the Saudis and the West have played the Muslim and the Jewish world, against one another for political reasons. And I agree with you. I mean, if there's one reason I am skeptical of that article and those allegations is that the Saudi element is that I do believe that if it was planted, if it was planted, it was planted by Saudi elements that, you know, misrepresenting themselves to the journalists.
Of course.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no way to prove that. And so you have to kind of say,
there's no way to prove the, you know, that, and everybody's jumping on Israel, which is exactly what they want, so
sure.
that if something does happen, anybody could do this, and they could blame Israel, and then everybody, all those, the Arab nations would break their treaties, and that's the end. And limited strikes on Iran, keep their oil fields intact.
Well, Barbara, let me just challenge you on one front, and I will freely acknowledge that I'm guilty of rational thought here. But given the situation in the Middle East and the general proximity of these factions, these different countries, how could anybody want anybody else to use a nuke? Because the potential fallout and just by, you know, breaking by setting the precedent could lead to a kind of massive loss of life that could be very difficult to control.
It's not that kind of nuke. And if they nuke Israel, they'll nuke the Palestinians, and they don't really care. I've spent some time. I've got relatives in Israel, and you know,
they don't need nukes. Here's the issue with the Iran is not Iraq. Iran's got elements that are, or I should say, cells that are will retaliate, and they will do so directly. They will be activated.
They're in Lebanon.
Oh, not just in Lebanon, within Israel, within Britain, within the U.S.
In Iraq?
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, we've never protected ourselves from who wants to get... And what we need to do is stop using oil and...
Okay, Barbara, I got you. Go ahead, Larissa.
Oh, no, this isn't a discussion we could have for hours.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly had it for hours with all sorts of people. But there appears to be, and certainly, you know, Bob Baer, who's a former CIA field officer, wrote a great piece, an op-ed about this, what he called an unholy alliance between Israel, Saudi Arabia, Britain, and the U.S. And so, you know, I think that there is enough evidence to believe that yes, Israel is prepping for a strike, but I don't know if it's for the same reasons. In other words, my opinion as to why may not be the same opinion as many of the experts have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm of the opinion that Israel is a client state of the West, and it will do what a client state does, and that is what it's told. I don't believe Israel is leading this, this charge.
Larissa, I have limited time, so I want to turn to the other key story here so we don't give it short shrift that you have written in the last few days. With informed speculation that John Negroponte accepted this demotion from head of the Uber intelligence agencies to the number two post at State, he was pushed aside, and his replacement, you seem to believe, will be more pliable to the desires of the White House.
Well, first, it's not so much speculation. I talked to enough people that I would say that there's ample evidence to really support what's being said here.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that it's not me saying he's more pliable. It's what some of the folks, some who went on the record, others who did not, stated. But it's not so much that it's a demotion either, because while the Director of National Intelligence does oversee 16 intelligence agencies, he really has no authority. Whereas being number two at State, I would think, has more authority in terms of foreign policy and more sway, more oomph. So I don't know if it's necessarily a demotion, but he was forced out or left, depending on who you talk to. Basically, because there's two key issues. The first is that he has been butting heads with the vice president's office, the vice president and his staff, like David Addington, over the national intelligence estimate on Iran. The NIH is aggregating basically all of the various information and intel that the 16 agencies have, and creating a consensus as to what we know in terms of Iran or any other topic, but in this case, Iran. And the parts of the NIE were leaked in 05 and basically showed that Iran is not a threat, something that obviously this administration is not comfortable with being out there, because their position is that Iran is a threat. But Negroponte has pushed back against that, both privately, or that is within the administration, and publicly, in that he's made very contrary statements to what the White House position is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically said, look, they're not a threat. They're many, many years off, at least 10 years off, from even being in a position to begin creating you know, what we would think of as the weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one issue where they were butting heads, and he was unwilling to lie, believe it or not. Because, you know, you have to look at Negroponte's background to understand
sure.
my
yeah.
certainly my shock.
Mm-hmm.
The second issue is, I think, a much more serious, at least in
okay.
my opinion.
Just 10 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, the second issue is basically that the White House wanted to expand domestic surveillance,
mm-hmm.
and Negroponte was unwilling to do that.
That's a real stretch, too, given his record. Thank you, Larissa. We'll talk again soon. Larissa Alexandrovna. Read her blog at atlargely.com.
Vote means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testifies lying before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can marry.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. You'll probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Mark Noller, live at the White House. 1 hour from now, President Bush goes before the American people to admit policy failures in Iraq while announcing an increase in U.S. forces there. In an address to the nation from the library of the White House residence, Mr. Bush will unveil a new strategy that commits nearly 22,000 more troops to Iraq. But that doesn't sit well with Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid.
We have Democratic and Republican senators who are concerned about this escalation in the war.
The president's speech will also include a stern message for Iraqi leaders, warning them to take more forceful action to end the sectarian violence. If they don't, says Mr. Bush, they'll lose the support of the American people. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Noller. With more CBS News, here's Bill Whitney.
The deployment will start this month, and CBS News correspondent David Martin reports most of the additional troops will go straight to the Iraqi capital.
About 17,500 soldiers will be assigned to the Baghdad operation, some deployed around the outskirts in what amounts to a giant cordon around the entire capital to try to keep insurgents from filtering in or out. Another 4,000 Marines are being sent to western Iraq to fight al-Qaeda terrorists.
The president will be asking Congress for $6.8 billion to cover the costs of this new plan.
House Democrats can cross another item off their first 100 hours agenda. Today, as CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports, they passed an increase in the federal minimum wage.
The House bill would give a small raise now to those at the minimum and over the next 2 years bring it up to $7.25 an hour. Still not much for a full-time worker with a family, but better than the $5.15 where it's been stuck for the past 10 years. House Democrats rejected Republican efforts to link the increase to some tax benefits for small businesses that hire a lot of minimum wage workers, but that may end up in the final bill that passes the Senate.
A lot of House Republicans joined the Democrats today. The vote was 315 to 116. After Hurricane Rita hit Texas, a bus evacuating nursing home residents caught fire on the road, killing 23 elderly people. Today, the owner of the bus company was sentenced to 5 years probation for poor maintenance of his fleet. Getting out of prison can be hazardous to your health. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports on a Washington State study that found newly released inmates are much more likely to die than the general population.
Drug overdoses were by far the biggest killer in the 2 weeks following release, accounting for more than 70% of the deaths. After 2 years, they were still the major cause of death among ex-inmates, followed by heart disease, murder, and suicide.
Experts say the findings show the need for better programs to help ex-cons cope with life on the outside. The price of oil continued its downward spiral today, closing at $54.02 a barrel. Stocks were higher, the Dow up 25 points, the Nasdaq up 15. This is CBS News.
So where do you two keep the books for your contracting business?
It's all up in the old noggin.
Yep, all our sales figures are right in his head.
I see. Does that concern you?
Not at all.
Every waking moment.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't. It even makes tax time a cinch.
We need that.
Are you sure? I got it all right here.
I'm sure.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at CompUSA, OfficeMax, or Circuit City.
Why settle for another pre-made combo meal when right now you can get a Subway Fresh Value Meal at a great price? A delicious sub with chips and a drink. The Subway Fresh Value Meal. What a deal. Subway restaurants, where freshness meets value. Subway. Eat fresh.
Offer good on regular 6-inch sub bag of chips and 21-ounce drink. Subway's registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
By an overwhelming margin, residents of a manufactured home community in South Florida have voted to sell their double-wide slices of paradise for mansion money. CBS News correspondent Peter King has the story.
A developer made them an offer they couldn't refuse. $510 million for the trailer park town of Briny Breezes. About 80% of the town's residents, who are also the owners, voted to take the money and run. For Kevin Dwyer, it's a huge windfall.
A little over $800,000. Yeah, before taxes and everything.
Others will become millionaires. Briny Breezes sits between the Atlantic Ocean and the Intracoastal Waterway, prime real estate here in Florida. The new owner will build high-end condos and hotels. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
A few flakes fell from the sky in the New York area today. No accumulation, but it ended the longest period without snow in 129 years. It's been a very warm winter so far. Last weekend, temperatures reached into the 70s, but forecasters say cold is coming. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Is your office in disarray? Can't find what you need? Well, Office Depot has great deals on file folders, binders, filing cabinets, shredders, and storage containers. Plus, we have over 800 calendars and planners to keep you up to date. So hurry in. Let Office Depot lend you a hand getting organized. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Whoa, Office Depot!
Drift away, 'cause here we're living for today.
Let's go out back tonight.
The go of the day. Go out back tonight, where fresh Ahi Tuna is seasoned, seared, and served on a bed of crisp romaine. Start the new year fresh. Leave your worries at the door.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life will still be there tomorrow.
Go out back.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're heading into the free speech zone where your calls and comments are welcome. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. We're just an hour away from the president's speech tonight, where it's widely expected he will propose an escalation of the American military presence in Iraq. We're very pleased to be joined right now by Congressman Sam Farr. He's a Democrat who represents the Central Coast of California, including at our flagship radio station, KRXA, in Monterey. Sam Farr, welcome back to our program.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm
really
doing...
nice to be back on your show.
Well, it's great to talk with you again, and it's such an exciting time. The Democrats in control, the first 100 hours is underway. I'm very pleased with the ethics reform. I'm okay with the 9/11 Commission reports. There are a couple of things in there I'm a little uncertain about, and I don't have that much confidence in the overall work of that commission, but I don't see any harm in the measures that were passed yesterday, at least not the ones that I'm aware of. And you're working on the minimum wage now. Did that pass?
That passed today.
It
yeah,
did?
It's a done deal on the House side, and we'll get the Senate to pass it and the President to sign it. I hope it's done quickly.
And I'm pleased to see how many Republicans are recognizing that most of these measures deserve their support.
Well, it was overwhelming tonight. I think they had 116, only 116 negative votes, 300 and some odd in favor of it. So a good number of Republicans, about 100 of them, voted for it.
I want to get your views on the president's speech, but first I want to talk about some signature legislation that you're putting forward in the new Congress. And it is called the Ocean Conservation Education, a National Strategy for the 21st Century. And it is labeled as H.R. 21, and you're putting a handle on it of Oceans 21. Is that a sequel to Oceans 11?
Well, Oceans 11 is about a little different game than the game of trying to have a good policy, environmental policy about the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
This bill is the... the work of the two commissions, the Pew Charitable Trust that put together the Pew Oceans Commission, which Leon Panetta and Christy Todd Whitman were on, and our own local Julie Packard sat on that commission, and then one that Congress passed, that President Clinton signed, and President Bush appointed the members, and that was the House Oceans bill that created the U.S. Oceans Commission. So both of those commissions have recommended a policy that needs to take this country and the world. The oceans are really global features that take us into the 21st century, and that's what this bill does.
And is the focus on reducing pollution, trying to extend the life of our fish stocks? So what would you say are the key elements?
Well, the whole bottom line is sustainability, and the bottom line here is what are you doing in the oceans that are hurting them? Because they're the sort of the lungs of the planet, and weather comes from them, and we've been dumping all our garbage in. You know, as Jacques Cousteau's Jean-Michel Michaud said, the oceans are dying because we've dumped everything that we don't like on land into the oceans, and they're suffering. So they're sick, and we've got to develop policies that are going to get them well.
Mm-hmm. And is this going to get buy-in from industry and, you know, some of the very people who benefit from the degradation of our oceans?
Well, fortunately, the heavy lifting was done by the commissions that listened to these folks all around this country. You know, both of them did that, and they've had a lot of input. I think this should be an easy lift, and unfortunately, the administration, which seems to not jump on any of these commission reports very well, as we'll see tonight on the Iraq and the Iraq Study Group's report, how much of that is going to be in the president's discussions. But I wish he'd just implemented all these things. But he hasn't, so Congress is going to have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's turn to the key story of the day and the president's speech. It's been widely leaked. We've been told that the word surge is not going to appear. And so now we're guessing people are going to their thesauruses to see what euphemism for escalation the president will embrace. You've been a longtime member of the Out of Iraq Caucus, and your office sent a press release today that hit a bullseye with me. Way forward in Iraq is withdrawal. And, Sam, I've been really puzzled as to why people, including Democratic leaders, up to and including Nancy Pelosi, have used this language of a way forward, which suggests that the president is going to come up with some novel new strategy that is going to lead to victory in Iraq. And I agree with you, there is no way forward.
Well, I don't think you've seen the Democratic leadership indicate that they're all supportive of what the president's going to say tonight. In fact, I think Congress
No. I want to be clear. Only on this terminology of a new way forward. Nancy has been using that pretty consistently since mid-December, and I believe it's a Republican talking point that obscures the reality and suggests that there is a way forward that could lead to victory.
Well, I think her way forward is my way, which is withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
She laid that down pretty clearly the night she was sworn in as Speaker of the House.
And subsequently, I think she's been quite strong in challenging the White House, making sure that it's clear that there's no blank check and that this Congress will not roll over as the Republican-controlled Congress in the past has.
Well, Peter, I think this is a historical moment. This is really about a crisis in government in our own country. We have a president who has been saying all along, steady on course, and has not wanted to listen to critics. In fact, he's had fired people in his administration who are critical. And I think everybody was hoping that after the elections and after the Iraq study group, that we would see the president come out with a different direction. And what we're hearing tonight is escalation. And you know what? We may not be able to prevent the commander-in-chief from beefing up the number of troops in Iraq, but certainly we hold the purse strings to paying for it. And I think that we have the ability to do a referendum, at least with a vote on the House floor and Senate floor, of whether his speech tonight, whether the members of Congress accept it. And if they reject it, and I think they will, what does that say about this? And I mean, we're very sensitive that we don't want to give a message that's going to hurt our troops, but we also don't think that this is the right way to go. I mean,
well,
I'll be looking for is what is he expecting from Iraq to put forward? I what I've just heard is he has no conditions on him. I mean, they could stay in bed and not have to get up in order to get those additional troops. We ought to make everything in Iraq now conditionality at a minimum, and we've never seen that. I mean, it's appalling.
But Sam, there for many years,
and we haven't even been able to have these things. The things he's suggesting tonight should have happened a long time ago, if at all.
But one of the fundamental conditions that this president should be suggesting, and is politically, it appears impossible, is the disarming of the Mahdi army, the brigades controlled by Muqtada al-Sadr. And Maliki can't do that.
That's
because
right.
He will lose control of his government if he does. And, you know, again, you know, putting more American troops in there and reconfiguring how they operate is not going to change those fundamental issues of that are part of Iraq. It's not the United States' responsibility.
I totally agree. I think you said it well, and I think that that's, you're having all variations of that theme here in Congress. But I don't think I find anybody suggesting that that this proposed escalation is going to have any beneficial.
Now, I want to come back to the tactics available to the Democrats to either slow the president down or even stop him if possible. And I do understand the Hobson's choices and the political minefields that you are navigating right now. I see a trap that Karl Rove wants to lay for the Democrats so that later on they can say, we were going to win, but the Democrats made us pull out, and that's why we lost. I call it the Curtis LeMay argument, the ghosts coming back from Vietnam. And so I do understand that while many Americans, including a lot of my listeners, are angry and they want immediate action and they want Congress to take every possible step, including cutting off funding, I do understand that the Democrats need to operate with an awareness of the consequences and the political traps that could be laid. But I am disappointed when I hear people like Jack Reed, the senator who's the point person on Iraq, go on television and flatly rule out any limitation on funding because it would, quote-unquote, hurt the troops. Dennis Kucinich has put it best. The money is there to bring the troops home. We can cut off funding for the war without hurting the troops.
Well, I agree. I mean, we're bankrupting our own social network in America with the money that's going to Iraq, and all these proposals now that we throw more money into Iraq for job development when we don't even have such programs here at home, it's ridiculous. I think I would, before everybody is so critical of what the Democrats are doing and what Congress and Senate are doing, I think listen to us tomorrow because everybody's going to be watching this speech here in Washington. I'm in my apartment because I have a cold, but I mean, all the places around the watering holes where everybody goes to or places they're eating dinner are all glued on watching this speech tonight. And I think most people have already made up their mind. They'll listen and they may change part of it, but I think the bottom line is you're going to see that Congress is going to be extremely critical of the president. And I think the American people will be too. I think he's going to ask the American people to trust him one more time. And, you know, he lied to us the first time, so I don't know why we want to have to listen to him again. And certainly we can make all of that money in Iraq conditioned upon things that I don't think will happen, and therefore reallocate it for bringing the troops home.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Democrat Congressman Sam Farr from the Central Coast. We're going to take a break and return. If you'd like to join us with a question or comment, lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. And as we continue, I want to pose some questions that we discussed last hour about the War Powers Resolution and what options Democrats have to try to limit future adventures by this president. Lines are open if you'd like to join us at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
This is Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunetarealestate.com.
The days of wine and roses.
12-step talk, uncensored.
Laugh and run away.
Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m.
Like a child.
12-step talk, uncensored. It's about time.
Through a meadow and toward a closing.
Look,
Welcome at your Central Coast traffic. We have a four-vehicle injury accident in Santa Cruz. This is southbound 17 at 1. One vehicle actually blocking the left-hand lane. Three other vehicles involved in this have been cleared over to the right-hand shoulder. CHP as well is on scene working on clearing that last vehicle over to the shoulder. In Aroma, southbound 101 at 156, we have a two-vehicle accident over on the right-hand shoulder. And a minor injury accident in San Ardo. This is southbound 101 after Alvarado Road. This is a car that went off the roadway, overturned on the shoulder, so CHP is on scene. Tow truck just about on scene to clear that out of there. Highway 17, both directions through Santa Cruz Mountains, checking in, stalling, accident-free. This report is brought to you by Mancini Sleep World. Save big during Mancini Sleep truckload mattress sale. They'll beat anyone's advertised price by 10% or your mattress set is free. Call 800-64-SLEEP and start sleeping better tonight. I'm Dio with traffic on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Our music of the moment from the PBC Tax Deductible Music Archives is Steve Winwood. This one's called Time is Running Out. And we continue our conversation with Sam Farr, the Democratic congressman who represents the Central Coast of California. He joins us from Washington this evening. And Josh joins us from Salinas. Hello, Josh. You're on the air.
Hi, I just got home. I want to thank Congressman Farr for all the wonderful work he's done in Congress. And I just wanted to give an announcement that here in Salinas there will be a vigil in front of the post office tomorrow night at 6 o'clock in opposition to escalation. And to support Congress, to let you guys know, Honorable Representative Farr, that indeed the American people don't want any more funding going to escalation. We want our troops home.
Well, I hear you, and I agree with you, and that'll be right outside my office. So we appreciate the petitioning of your government and the actions you're taking.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's how we chose the site.
All right, Josh, thank you for the call. Really
thanks
appreciate
it.
Sam Farr, last hour I had a conversation with John Quigley, who is a professor of law at Ohio State, who knows much more than I do about the War Powers Resolution and the construction of the Constitution related to the authorization for war.
I wish I'd heard that. I'm fascinated by that issue.
Well, I'm curious because, as I touched on in the first segment, I recognize the problems both in unifying the Democratic caucuses around a cutoff of funding and the potential backfiring of that and the way Republicans could use it against Democrats. And so in talking with the professor, my argument is that the War Powers Act, the War Powers Resolution, really requires that if the president commits a significant additional forces, that's the language in the law, that it requires a new approval from Congress. And along with that, I would cite Senator John Warner, who last summer and subsequently has repeated his sense that because the situation has changed so much from the time of October-November 2002, when the original authorization for military force was passed by both houses, that the civil war that now exists in Iraq is so different from the defensive operation that was contemplated by the original legislation, that the president just flat out needs a new authorization. What's your take on that?
Well, several comments about that, and I really appreciate you outlining that. First of all, it'd be very interesting to see how Senator Warner both on Senator Kennedy's proposal that this escalation in Iraq needs congressional approval. I don't think that resolution is, I mean, from what I've just heard from the pundits, that it's not going to pass, although that's the attempt to really solidify what our constitutional authority is. This is a historical debate. It's been going on for decades in all our wars, and I remember one night when we were debating whether President Clinton, this is when the Republicans were in charge of the House and Senate, insisted that President Clinton had to have permission to go into Kosovo. The frustration came out in a resolution to vote, at least how is Congress going to stand on it. There were three resolutions. First, to vote to support the war. It failed. The second was to oppose the war. It failed. And the third was to do nothing about it, and it failed. So I think a lot of it depends on what the party of the presidency and what the majority of the House and Senate is. But Congress has failed to really exercise its constitutional authority, and those of us who are sort of strict constitutionalists on that authority think that that is what the president needs to do. But as they say, this president and the former presidents have ignored that.
Well, I would encourage you to pursue this line. I think it could be a greater unifying factor for the Democrats who, I think have a consensus on the big picture and not so much unity in the details.
Well, I think that we will be smart about appropriating this. Remember, the chair of the Committee on Military Appropriations, Defense Appropriations, is Jack Murtha.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack's the one that took the president on this redeployment, which is president labeled him as cut and run and so on.
Right.
Jack's on the line now because he's been out there for the last year stating that there's the way to get out of Iraq is to withdraw or redeploy to the region, other parts of the region, and in charge of all that money. And I think that he's going to use it very wisely to make sure that there's contingencies upon it that essentially move towards withdrawal, because that's what his politics is all about these mm-hmm. days.
Congressman, just about a minute remaining, and I want to turn to Iran. We've been following carefully the developments. We have the Stennis Carrier Group heading for the Persian Gulf. We know the orientation of the White House in terms of confronting Iran. There was the story that floated out of the London Times last weekend that Israel has been conducting war games, contemplating a possible nuclear strike to deny Iran nuclear capabilities. And we're very concerned about that arena. Returning to the war powers issue, do you believe that this president has any legal basis to launch an attack against Iran?
None whatsoever, no. And I don't think he has any support in Congress to do that. And we're terrified of what this administration would do. I don't think, frankly, they can. We're so tied down in Iraq right now, and you'll hear the critics when the president speaks tonight about it. Where are these troops going to come from? We just don't have the manpower to put the all of these people in Iraq that he wants us to put there. And to think that we could fight another war at this time is, I think, impossible.
Well, and we've got the exciting new front opened up in Somalia.
Yeah.
Congressman, thank you very much.
It's a very critical time for Americans to get involved and express themselves on this issue, and I appreciate people who want to petition my office and all the congressional offices to let them know how they feel about the president's speech tonight.
Thank you, Congressman Sam Farr. Hope you feel better.
Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Post Graduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
I'll tell you what I got cooking, Dinners Ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinners Ready?
That's right, Dinners Ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
The Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With Pilar. With Pilar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different. Or we'll do the same old thing. Take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with Pilar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Mr. B. Collins Show continues. Unless the president announces curtailment of the First Amendment, your free speech rights are in full effect. So call me now and let me know your reaction to Congressman Sam Farr's comments and the president's speech tonight. 888-5-PETER-B, toll free. All the lines are open right now. That's 888-573-8372.
Did you ever have to make up your mind?
Well, the decider has been dithering, consulting, listening, and generally ignoring all of the advice that has been offered. And about half an hour from now, he's going to address the nation. And from the preliminary reports, we've been told he won't use the word surge, but he's going to propose an increase over the next few months of 20 or 21,000 American troops. The first 90 or so apparently have already been dispatched and are due to arrive in Baghdad in imminent hours. And this whole thing is just so bizarre. I found Congressman Farr to be very direct and honest, and I think that he hears the comments from me and from constituents. He invites more of you to express yourselves in his congressional office in Salinas tomorrow evening. That's where the rally will be held near the post office there. And while I felt that when I talked with him about Nancy Pelosi's use of the new way forward, he didn't quite seem to grasp how that language has advanced the interests of the White House. I do agree with him that she has been pretty direct since she was sworn in last Thursday in saying, you know, drawing a line and saying this president needs to consult with the Congress and needs to come up with a plan that the Congress can approve. So I'd like to hear your thoughts. Lines are wide open. I got four lines open right now. So I'll repeat the number for you at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'd like to hear from you this evening, particularly if you've been listening for a while and you have never called. I invite you to share your comments. And if you support the president, I really want you to call, and I want to hear your arguments. 888-573-8372. We go first to Mike in Phoenix. Thanks for your call, Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I have been listening for a while. I don't support the president in much of anything. Just a couple of observations in response to your guest from last hour, Larissa,
mm-hmm.
who I think her analysis was close to being accurate. She was talking about the Israel being a client state of the United States. That's I don't think that's accurate. If anything, it's probably the other way around. The Israeli lobbies are very good at doing what they do.
I think it's an interlocking relationship, and maybe we're mutually clients.
It is to a great extent. My cap is honors the survivors of the USS Liberty from 1967, and that was basically done by Lyndon Johnson and McNamara and Israel at the highest levels. They wanted to get us into the so-called Six-Day War, and they were willing to. Johnson was willing to sacrifice one of our ships to do it. And the Israelis, for their part, didn't want one of our intelligence ships looking on as they slaughtered the Egyptian prisoners that they had just captured. So everyone at the highest levels had something to gain there from sinking the Liberty. But this situation, as you suggested, is really not susceptible to rational analysis until you understand that secret societies, the kind that Benjamin Disraeli, the first Jewish British prime minister, talked about back as far as the 1850s. He mentioned that these secret societies crisscrossed Europe and they permeated the society, and they've only gotten worse since then. And they've since the early 1800s, they've gotten into the United States.
And Mike, have you? I was just going to mention, have you seen the new film, The Good Shepherd?
I did. It's a little bit watered down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what these people are into is far more sinister than is even portrayed. But I give it a recommendation. It's certainly worth seeing.
Well, and just in the last couple of days, this came over the internet, so I want to be clear. I haven't fully investigated or sourced this, but it's something that I don't find unbelievable. And that is that they're tracing George H.W. Bush's connections to the CIA back to the 1950s, his Zapata Oil Company. And Zapata is a term that shows up in some covert actions in relation to Cuba and Central America in the 1960s. And there's more probably going to come out on that angle.
Yeah,
but
kind of old news to those of us who've been looking into this for a while.
Sure, but it does tie back.
Had a pretty important role in the assassination of Kennedy as well.
It's possible, and it does tie back, as you suggest, to Skull and Bones, secret societies, and the way that as the OSS morphed into the CIA at the end of World War II, that there was certainly some recruiting from these organizations like Skull and Bones. Because it really offered people the foundation to build a spook society on.
Yeah, it's the importance of these secret societies, including Freemasonry, the very high levels of Freemasonry. These people know it's Luciferian, just as the Bohemian Grove set knows it is, and many of them are actively occultist. The importance of being a member of one of these organizations is that there's an oath of secrecy, and it's taken very seriously by those who enter it. If they don't take it seriously, they come to a bad end if they break it. So that you can depend on these people to keep your secrets, and that's why it's so important. The Skull and Bones, in particular, and the real name of it is the Order of Death, or just the Order, as they. They frequently refer to it.
Mm-hmm.
This is an offshoot of an old Bohemian death cult. You can look back at films from World War One and see the officers wearing the Skull and Bones on their caps. It goes way back. But these people worship death, and it's very serious amongst them. And this is not college fraternity, prankster stuff. These people take serious oaths and swear allegiance to deities other than the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that people better get learned quickly about this, because I don't know if you caught the news, but I'm sure you did. Pat Robertson, himself a 33rd degree Mason, came out with a communication allegedly, straight off the hotline from God that
yeah.
There was some kind of horrible disaster in store for us in the latter half of this year. And, this is a made man we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
this criminal elite. I mean, you think of them like mobsters because they're intimately tied in with the mob as well. I mean, the mob does a lot of the hit work for them and the intelligence work. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. He may have it a little bit off, you know, within a few months or so, but take that very seriously. Get yourself prepared. And I have to tell you, we're way beyond just calling up your congressman or writing letters. You need to start getting in these people's faces. They need to feel some heat because otherwise these secret societies are very dominating, and they have, you know, they have the international banking money behind them, and that money talks. So,
all right, Mike, thank you for a thoughtful call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Good to hear from you. And I'll just add that I believe Craig Unger is the author of House of Bush, House of Saud, or maybe it's the other way around. And even if you don't believe the kind of conspiratorial stuff that Mike is just describing, you see the collusion that has gone over the years. And you don't have to necessarily believe that there are secret societies or spook groups right behind it, because the profit motive is enough to drive these associations that, you know, have brought the Bush family together with the Bin Laden family under the watchful gaze of the Saudi royal family. Next up on the phone, we've got Steve in Watsonville. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good lead-in. You know, the good shepherd, De Niro's good shepherd, as much as says that OSS was a direct derivative from Skull and Bones.
It does make that suggestion, yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to be cautious that it's a fabulous movie, but it is based on Hollywood interpretations of the facts. And
your last caller, referring to our, you know, history of secret societies in this country, I'm sure the same has been true in the Eastern Bloc countries, but some of them have been suppressed. And I think that's our time. The reason I asked Matt if I could call is I want to know how many of those contractor dollars that Halliburton and Blackwater are spending are going to Bulgarian and Moldavian and Ukrainian mercenaries that are working over there. That are, you know, that tied into the Russian equivalent of the Skull and Bones kind of creeps.
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that many of the non-security contractors are non-Americans. And just as an example, there was an announcement of an airplane that crashed near Baghdad in the last couple of days, and I believe 30 to 40 contractors were killed, and I don't believe one of them was American.
Well, you know, that was making me think, it takes a lot of money to train somebody to operate an M16. It takes a lot of money to train somebody to operate an 18-wheeler.
Okay.
From the Iraqi point of view, both of them are basically weapons of mass destruction. You know, so if they don't happen to be enough Iraqis that know how to operate 18-wheelers and they got to go hire a bunch of Bulgarians, from the Iraqi point of view, they're scabs. They're carpetbaggers.
Well, I would make the case that there are many Iraqis who are capable of driving 18-wheelers, and that the U.S.
Yeah, but they're all friends of Saddam.
Well, not necessarily. And at this point, we've screwed up things so bad that we can't keep track of who was a Ba'athist and
no kidding.
A Saddam sympathizer.
Oh, well, we destroyed all the records when we went in.
Well, that was one of the downsides, yeah.
No kidding.
Hey, Steve, was it you who had brought up the idea of the Warren Zevon song? Roland?
Can you play it?
Yeah, I am. Coming up right after the next break.
Love you.
Okay, I love you too, Steve. So you hold on, or you just keep listening, and we'll get some Warren Zevon on for you after the break. 888-5 Peter B, if you'd like to call in. I've got room for another couple of calls before the top of the hour here in the Free Speech Zone. I'd love to hear from you. In particular, if you've never called the program and if you support the president, I'd like to hear from you. We'll give you a respectful hearing and then I'll give you a big piece of my mind. You know that's coming. Line's open for you. 888-5 Peter B. 888-573-8372. Visit our website at peterbcollins.com. That's where you can get access to our archive programs. And there's even a picture of me there if you're curious what he looks like. And if you have ideas for topics or guests you'd like to hear on the Peter B. Collins Show, drop a note to our able producer, Matt Renner. Address it to matt@peterbcollins.com.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Join Glenn Brooks and pioneering dentist Dr. Floris Day in igniting a new wellness revolution that redefines the word natural and puts the tools you need for complete vitality into your hands. If you have avoided or hated the dentist or simply want to take your health up a notch, this is the program for you. Tune in to Vibrant Living right here on KRXA 540 AM at 10 o'clock this Saturday morning, January 13th.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Nissan Quest, a minivan that gives you everything you could want, if indeed you need a minivan. My Quest demo has a fuel-injected six-cylinder engine that's got plenty of power and a smooth five-speed automatic. It's very well-designed, seats seven, and has every feature you can think of. A big sunroof, power side doors, and, well, just about power everything. DVD with wireless headsets, nav system, satellite radio, but it's really practical, too. I folded down the rear seats and loaded in an oversized six-foot bathtub, and it fit nicely with all doors closed. By the numbers, the 2007 Nissan Quest 3.5 SE gets about 18 miles in the city, 25 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $41,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Well, we have an accident in the final clearing stages in Santa Cruz. This is southbound 17 at 1. Four vehicles involved in this. It had been blocking the lanes for a little bit of time. They're all over on the right-hand shoulder now. Emergency crews on scene working on this as well. Cashville, Preston Road at Merritt Street. We have a two-vehicle accident on the right-hand shoulder. In Salinas, Old Stage Road north of Zabala Road. Take it a little slow through that area. Got a cow walking in and out of the lanes. In Greenfield, Thorn Road west of 101. We have a two-vehicle accident. No lane information just yet, so CHP is en route to check up on that. Highway 17, both directions through Santa Cruz Mountains, checking in stall and accident free. This report brought to you by Welch's Purple Grape Juice. The American Heart Association recommends a diet rich in antioxidants. So where can you find them? Welch's 100% grape juice. It's full of natural protective antioxidants. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
We were talking about contractors and mercenaries in Iraq. Steve from Watsonville suggested this Warren Zevon song.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Through 66 and 7, they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee deep in gore. Days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson Gunner. Roland the Thompson Gunner. His comrades fought beside him, Van Owen and the rest. But of all the Thompson Gunners, Roland was the best. So the CIA decided they wanted Roland. Son of a bitch, Van Owen blew off Roland's head.
The late great Warren Zevon.
Norway's bravest sons of the
You know, when he first arrived on the American music scene, they considered him a punk rocker. Of course, they put Tom Petty in that category, too. Steve, thanks for the inspiration. I appreciate that. Lines open if you'd like to comment on the president's speech, just about 10 minutes away. 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free 888-573-8372. James in Phoenix, you're next.
Hi. Hi, Peter. This is the first time I've had a chance to give you a call.
Oh, I'm delighted to hear from you.
We've just been listening to you on... here in Phoenix since you guys switched over, and it's been really nice to listen to you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to express my just, I can't even put in words how disgusted I am with the whole policy and what's really been done to the U.S., which really, we used to be this remarkable country with these high ideals that we held up, and what's been done in our name in Iraq is just beyond criminal, and I can't stand it. But
well, I certainly share your sentiment.
What I was thinking with the Iraq situation is it's been handled so badly from every standpoint that we're at a situation where there is no way to salvage this. It's only going to end in this just disaster. Of epic proportions. What I'm afraid of is, even if we are successful in deploying troops to other regions or pulling out significant portions of it, what that's going to end up with is, I fully suspect that there's a great possibility that the Shiites are going to start ethnic cleansing on the Sunnis. To the point where we will have instigated a genocide.
Well, there's mutual ethnic cleansing underway right now. The battle that we talked about in Baghdad yesterday, more than 1,000 U.S. troops were required to back up the Iraqis, and this was just less than a mile from the Green Zone on Haifa Avenue. And this is an area, at least according to the New York Times, that has been a place where Sunnis had gone for refuge. And we know that the Iraqi security forces and police are heavily controlled by the Shias, and in particular infiltrated by the Mahdi army, which is Muqtada al-Sadr's militia. And so, yes, we are. I mean, what Bush is proposing is to send more troops to preside over this internecine warfare, to put American troops, more of them, in training mode, with these Iraqi forces whose loyalties cannot be divined and certainly cannot be trusted. And so we're going to compound the risk to American forces who are an irritant because of the occupation and the symbol and the reality that reflects, as well as putting them at risk from what might be called friendly fire, because they're going to be embedded as trainers in these Iraqi units where it's highly likely that Iraqis will find the opportunity to kill Americans. And they may be Shia, they may be Sunni. On any given day, we can't predict whose axe is going to be ground or gored. I don't know where to go with that one.
and we're providing training, and I'm sure we're arming them so that they can go out and kill each other. And you wonder if there's, you know, the slimy weapons dealer, parody in the movies. Is that what we've become here? Is that we're just adding, you wonder if there's, the slimy weapons dealer, parody in the movies. Is that what we've become here? Is that we're just... adding fuel on the fire, and here's how you guys can kill each other better. And I just don't know that there's anything that's going to prevent this from just turning into just the worst possible outcome.
Well, if I could control either a bubble over Bush's head or the crawl text across the bottom, I would say, President Bush, quote, "I'm putting out fire with gasoline."
Exactly. And then... At the end of it, we'll end up with theocracy that's aligned with whoever wants to hate us more. And if we try and intervene, that's just more gas on the fire.
And I believe that there was a brief window of opportunity after we toppled Saddam, and as the coalition provisional authority, as it was called, was getting underway. And they blew it when they fired all the people in the army and purged all the Baathists. They put, you know, hundreds of thousands of armed men out of work with no other opportunity but to, you know, seek civil war. And we compounded that by blowing the Reconstruction. We really haven't been serious about that. The idea of a jobs program is great. Should have been there 3 years ago. And to try to propose that now is water under the bridge, over the dam, whichever bad metaphor you like. James, thanks for your call. I really appreciate that you're listening to the show.
Take care.
You bet. Ivy in Phoenix, you're next here on the PBC show.
Hi, Peter. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Ivy. How are you tonight?
I'm still alive. I guess that's a prerequisite.
Yeah?
My thought is, you're talking about songs. Why in the heck can't somebody dig up Freedom Star? It was the B-side of Serendipity Singers. I think it was Don't Let the Rain Come In.
Oh.
It was about as patriotic as a song as you're going to find anywhere.
Okay. I do not have that in the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible music archives.
Well, I've been looking for that on the Internet, and I cannot find it.
Huh.
I'm going to hang my hopes on Freedom Star. I'm going to spread the word both near and far. Stentorian men, hold your head up high. Da-da-da-da. You cannot buy. Oh, thanks, my brothers, for Freedom Star. And I know, don't quit my day job. Right?
No, no, and please, don't go on American Idol. I couldn't imagine what Simon would do to you. All right, Ivy, thanks for the tip.
And had a great one.
I'd go looking in the used record bin in the vinyl section for that one.
Right. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Well, I want to thank everybody who called and joined this conversation today. I thank you for listening to the program. I'm heading home to watch this sorry president give his incredible speech. And we're going to talk about this tomorrow. So we'll be back at you same time, same great radio stations. And I hope you'll tune in then. And I hope you'll call in and talk with us. This program's produced in San Francisco by Matt Renner. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
We want to welcome Assemblywoman Anna Caballero back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you very much for the invitation.
We are so glad to have you on. We were at the victory party for you, and you were so happy, and I rightfully so.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, right up until you asked me to leave the party. You and Lucy, that was it.
Well, it was the dancing on the table that got you. The TV cameras were there. It just didn't look right.
So. I got you.
The show on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Howard Arenstein, live in Washington. It's a speech the country and the world have been anticipating for weeks. President Bush is standing by right now in the library at the White House for a nationally broadcast address on his new Iraq policy. Here's what we know so far.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House. The president will admit publicly that mistakes have been made and a new way forward is needed. He'll announce an increase of 22,000 U.S. troops in Iraq to help quell the surge in sectarian killing, especially in and around Baghdad. But at the same time, he'll serve notice on the Iraqi leaders that they must do more to stop the violence or risk losing American support. Mr. Bush will declare that America's commitment to Iraq is not open-ended.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. Democrats are strongly opposed to adding more troops, saying there's no reason to think that will make things any better. President Bush briefed congressional leaders this afternoon on his plan, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wasn't satisfied.
We wanted to know why there was any prospect that it would be successful now. Why are they doing this now? That question remains.
Pelosi says troops have been added before to no avail. Congress will hold hearings on the Iraq plan starting in the morning. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The White House is warning tonight that the consequences of failure in Iraq could not be graver, adding the war on terror cannot be won if the U.S. fails there. We're going to take you now live to the White House to hear the top of President Bush's speech.
The armed forces of the United States are engaged in a struggle that will determine the direction of the global war on terror and our safety here at home. The new strategy I outlined tonight will change America's course in Iraq and help us succeed in the fight against terror. When I addressed you just over a year ago, nearly 12 million Iraqis had cast their ballots for a unified and democratic nation. The elections of 2005 were a stunning achievement. We thought that these elections would bring the Iraqis together, and that as we trained Iraqi security forces, we could accomplish our mission with fewer American troops. But in 2006, the opposite happened. The violence in Iraq, particularly in Baghdad,